Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up.
Hello, everybody. It is Tawny reporting live from New York City, joined by my fabulous co-host,
Lisa, reporting from Del Mar, California.
Hello. How is it down there?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. I don't know if anybody follows, but we had an extremely gray winter, rainy winter. There was almost no sunshine for like the first 6 months of the year, which is just so uncharacteristic here. People were like moaning that they felt like they lived in Seattle. Weather-wise, Seattle's a great city, which we love, but weather-wise. And now it seems it's cleared up. So it's good. I love it. It's good for my mood.
And I was going to say that's funny. It's not funny, but the reason people move to San Diego is because it's supposed to be perfect weather all the time.
All the time, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it is. Yeah. Not that I don't like a good storm, but.
Yeah, that's different. That's very different than just day after day of just groggy. Yeah, I get that. I'm glad it's better.
Yes.
I'm reading a lot of books, Lisa.
So am I. We have both been on a tear, and I don't know if it's like the summer, but there have been so many good books that you and I have both read. There's a few that I've read that you haven't and vice versa, but there were some books. There are some recent books that really have, have been really affecting. And I think also like hit on not just the idea, not recovery specific and not addiction specific, but the behaviors, right? That we, things we see in sort of patterns of behavior that are, you know, in other people, in the protagonist, in other people, whatever, all over, that are, I don't know, it felt like reading things, some of these books have been like very, I've been on a mental health journey with a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
So let's dig in. Where do you want to start?
Well, and these are mostly fiction books. I will say before we dive in, I have not always been this voracious of a reader, and B, the pandemic got me into fiction. I was always a nonfiction reader, even as a kid, Lisa. As a kid, I read memoir.
And I read books about the Vietnam War as a kid. I don't.
Okay, so that makes me feel better. I read. I remember. I traveled a lot back and forth between California and Texas growing up, and I remember my uncle picked me up from the airport one time in California, and I was holding a Johnny Depp's memoir. I was like 10. He's like, "Why are you reading about that?" And I was like, "I want to know about Johnny Depp, how he grew up."
I need a picture of a 10-year-old Tawny holding up Johnny Depp's memoir.
That's how I've always been. I mean, or true crime. Like I've always
And how much memoir could he have had? you know.
I mean, this probably was not even an authorized biography.
Right,
it was just
right. some like, book. Yeah.
It was
yeah,
just
yeah.
some book about Johnny Depp that I had yeah. that I had to have. That was just how I've always read. And then I will say the pandemic got me into fiction because I needed, I found it to be a healthy escape. Honestly,
well, it was, sure. yeah.
I was so overwhelmed living in New York City during the pandemic. There was so much unknown, the 24-hour news cycle. I was like, I don't want to read anything real right now. I was like, I want to go into another world. And mm-hmm. Nick even commented, he was like, he would look at the books that I was reading and, you know, book covers will either say like, it's the title of the book. It'll say like a memoir, a novel, a book of essays. And a lot of my reading was a novel, a novel, a novel.
Yeah.
He's like, he said, you're reading a novel? I was like, are you okay? I was like, I really am. I'm really enjoying this. This is great.
I read an uncharacteristic amount of fiction this summer too. I usually mix it up, but I'm usually heavier nonfiction. It's just been, I feel like for the kinds of books that you and I get into, I
yeah.
think it just some really compelling titles have come out.
I will say, and my reading habits have also changed. I do a lot of the nonfiction that I read now is audio.
Right. You are listening to books.
I do a lot of audiobook now, but I don't like audiobook fiction. I don't know why, but
yeah.
And so I listen to less podcasts and more audiobooks.
I love that. My whole issue with it's not that bad if I like space out in and out of a podcast, but if I am listening to a book and I space out, then I have to go all the way back. So
yeah.
I don't really listen to books. But okay, what was your favorite? Do you have a favorite? Let me ask.
Okay, so I am a nerd and I love my Goodreads profile. I keep track of everything on there. I have my Goodreads pulled up.
Oh, good.
Do you want to guess how many books I've read so far this year, Lisa?
No, I can't even. You want me to take a wild stab?
Yeah, I want you to guess.
25.
42.
Oh my God. With everything else. But see, this is what, like, this is our escape, right? Like, we are big readers. Like, when it's like quiet time, it's time to read.
Exactly. And it's like, and reading is such an important part of writing.
I think
the more I read, the better writer I become. So
100%.
Whether it's fiction or nonfiction, just reading other people's work inspires me, you know?
Yes.
And so I will say that a book that I just finished, it's a novel that just came out by Haley Jacobson called Old Enough. And it's a coming of age. Coming of age novel about, it takes place in college. She's the protagonist is a sophomore in college and it takes place in her gender studies class. And in her class, she works through some shit. She went through a lot in high school that she didn't get to unpack until she took this gender studies class and learned the language to learn about all of these things that happened. And for me, it's a lesson on, you know, again, it's a novel. So it's really rich dialogue, really rich characters. And it's a lesson on the importance of language and the importance of visibility to help us process things that have happened. And I don't want to give away any spoilers, but, you know, it's a queer book. She learns about her queer identity in college. She learns about trauma. She learns about, she has these words to describe herself now. And it's not a sobriety book, but I will say the protagonist has a fraught relationship with alcohol. And the author did such a good job of showing how people who don't drink have to defend their choice not to drink in social settings.
Oh, wow.
And I had not seen that in a book that wasn't about sobriety. And that really stood out to me.
Wow. I'll have to check that out. I mean, that is so huge to have like the somebody to go on a journey with a protagonist who is learning how to speak, learning language for her own experiences.
Exactly.
Even while that is not exactly about alcohol, like a lot of what we do when we get sober is learn language to sort of, we're like, oh, this is what that's about. And oh, this is how I can handle, you know, a situation or whatever, like being able to express feelings in actual words versus sort of, you know, shutting them out or,
yes,
you know, not running away from it. Like, what a huge, that's a journey I would like to go on with the protagonist.
Exactly. And it helped me empathize. I think that this is what fiction is famous for. It really helps build empathy. And, you know, you're a 19-year-old college sophomore again, and you remember how frustrating and terrifying that chapter is. And it was a little healing even for me to.
Sure.
So yeah, I highly, highly recommend that book. And I mentioned that in my review on Instagram, and the author commented, and she was just like, that's one of the most, the sobriety theme or that conversation. I put so much effort into doing that right. And a lot of people didn't pick up on that theme. So thank you for picking up on that.
And so you're always the model student.
I started this conversation saying I'm a nerd. I literally keep track of my reading on Goodreads.
In the best way.
This is me. Okay. What about you? Which book do you want to talk about?
I will start with, and then we should talk about two that we overlapped with.
Yeah.
That we were both like ripping through. The one that sort of opened up the summer for me that I just loved was John Irving's, and it's a commitment. It's a lot of pages. It's called, his latest book is called The Last Chairlift. And it is, he wrote, my very favorite book is A Prayer for Owen Meany, a John Irving book. And he wrote The World According to Garp and The Cider House Rules and a whole bunch of things, The Hotel New Hampshire. And he was an author that my mom and I really bonded over. Like, we went to go see him together. We would always talk about his books. We'd get the book the day it came out. We'd start reading,
all that.
Yeah. So to read The Last Chairlift, which is really his interpretation of Great Expectations of the Dickens, he's often referred to as like a Dickensian writer because it's these big books, but he is so unique. And it just, in the same way that I think, I've talked about this, that right around when my mom died, shortly before and then for a while thereafter, I was watching all the old Inspector Morse mysteries on PBS because that was her fave, and it just made me, you know, it made me feel good. And so this book, if you're a John Irving fan, is fantastic, period. But, you know, for me, reading John Irving and reading like really like peak performance John Irving was just such a treat. I loved it.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yes.
I'm curious, what was it like to read a John Irving book? Like, this must be the first one you've read since your mom passed.
Yeah.
So it must have been a different reading experience.
Yes. It's been a few years now. Like the last couple, like she was not able to,
okay,
you know, like, or the last one, I should say, because the last big one wasn't Last Night in Twisted River. It was, I can't remember, but she wasn't able to do the last one. But reading it, it feels like home because he has a very specific style. Like, you know, you're reading a John Irving book, and it just felt like home. So yeah, it was really good. And, you know, it's a lot. He goes a lot into gender issues, like the protagonist. Well, I don't want to ruin it, but it's early days of the protagonist is not trans, but there is a main character who the protagonist, you know, just adores, is like a major figure in the protagonist's life. And it starts in like the 60s. And so you see how it was, how, you know, this person was able, how this person did express themselves then in the ways that, you know, would be different today that they could not then. And then as time went on, you know, it's a lot of LGBTQ advocacy in that book.
I mean, you had me at LGBTQ advocacy. So thank
you. Oh, yeah, huge, huge. So so that's the last chairlift. And okay, now we've got to talk about Ripe.
Yes, I'm going to grab my copy real quick. You start talking about it because there's something I wanted to reference. You go ahead.
Oh, okay. So now Ripe is a novel that came out really recently. And I believe, is it on Roxane Gay's imprint? Is that one? I feel like it might have been. I'm not sure, but...
I don't think so, but Roxane... Oh, no, okay. It's Simon & Schuster.
Oh, okay.
But Roxane Gay did her launch event at the Strand. So
Roxane, that's why I'm thinking of
yeah.
it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe this. Again, it's a novel. So, okay, I have never read a book, a novel that is structured so in such a unique way. Because we get her story, we get the story, but
then
it's
also... The protagonist is working in Silicon Valley in a tech startup, and it's not for her.
This is not a spoiler, she's struggling with depression, and it is a big, very large theme of the book.
It's a major theme, right?
That she explores in such interesting ways, through research. Like, there's, like, the chapters are split up by... You know, she'll give a definition of a word and then we'll get a memory of what that word meant to her and then to the protagonist. And then also then we get a page of black hole research. And the reason that it's black hole is her depression is manifests in the form of a black hole for her. And that follows her around everywhere. And the metaphor,
it seems like it's visible to her.
Exactly. And she doesn't understand why other people can't see it, but it's so visible for her. And I don't know. I have so much of this is dog-eared and highlighted. And I'm just like, this might be one of my favorite books of the year, Lisa. And I don't want to oversell it, but.
No, I feel that way too. It sticks with me.
Yeah. I think about it a lot.
Well, it really is, you know, when you think about, like, to me, the main theme is her depression, which also manifests, you know, she's going through this world where it looks like she's got the great job. She lives in San Francisco. Like, from the outside, people are like, hey, you know, everything's right. Like, I identified a lot with that idea of people thinking you're fine. Nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
And she, in the descriptions of when this black hole is big versus when it gets tiny, you know, a lot of when you see it get tiny is when she drinks, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, it was very much a book about substance use and addiction because she drank to make it go away and did drugs. And she has a friend, her one real friend in the book is like a blackout drunk all mm-hmm. the time. And this is, and it's not just, it's part of it. Is that, you know, they seem to see the world in the bigger picture than the little tech workers who are running around in their windbreakers that they got for being there 5 years and all this stuff at the shop. And like, she is seeing that priority and that whatever while she's looking out the window of her office, and she seems to be the only one who notices or cares that there's an encampment of homeless men who are bathing in the river right behind them. And, you know, she has a real, the way of that disconnect between, you know, the world she's sitting in behind in this glass tower versus what's directly outside, she can't, that won't work, you know?
Though this book takes place in Silicon Valley, it very much resonated with me living in New York.
Yes.
Because she talks a lot about public transportation. She talks a lot about just the increase, the rising ubiquity of the homeless population and people that need help. They need community resources, and they're just being literally stepped over. And
yes,
that when I read about that, it just invoked such a visceral reaction in me, because that's what it's like here. It's, you know, I'm on the train going to record my audiobook, and then there's someone who clearly does not live anywhere, and they are transient, and they're having a meltdown on the subway right next to me. And she did a really good job of capturing that. To me, was an indescribable feeling of how can these two people exist at the same time? How am I going to do something really fun and exciting, and this person doesn't know where their next meal's coming from? How have we as a society gotten here?
Yes. Yes. And that is, you know, and how are, I think she also has this feeling of, how are all these people running around me in this office? How can they not pay attention to this? How can they not,
yeah,
you know, how can they zone this out when they, and you just see the escalation of like the measure, the I don't care what I destroy measures in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, the whole time that we see her in this turmoil, nobody sees it around her, including her parents, who are very like, yeah, hey, you did great. Now you're on your own. Go, go, go. Look at you go.
Yeah.
So it's a heavy read, I think. Like, but it's not light, but it is a fast read, because like it moves and I couldn't put it down.
No, and it's 260 pages. It's a quick, I mean, it was a quick read, but
well,
it's
I'm
like
a
you
slow
said,
reader.
It's heavy. Well, I mean, I have read 42 books this year.
That's right. I could never. That's unfathomable to me.
Again,
not
audiobooks.
Only do you read them, you annotate them.
I will say half of those are probably audiobooks. I don't think I could sit and physically read 42 books. A lot of it is audio. And so let's talk about our other shared novel, which is Yellow Face.
Yes.
This is the book that if you are interested in books, literature, you've heard about Yellow Face. It's the book everyone read this summer, and it's, can you describe it?
Yes, it is like super dark humor, I would say, right?
It's a satire.
It's a satire, but it's also, it's like, it's such a good mirror on so many things, like in the publishing industry and stuff like that. But it is basically the story, the protagonist is a writer, and she has more of like an acquaintance. And I'm not giving anything away, because this is what you would see if you read the description. She has an acquaintance who's like this super, you know, it writer. They went to Yale together and whatever. And I forget the name of the friend, but
Eileen,
something. Anyway, she is, she's Asian American, and she has been working. Nobody has sort of seen this because the way she works, she's been working on a book about exploitation of Chinese workers in World War One, and through happenstance, the protagonist ends up at her, June is the protagonist. She ends up at
Athena.
Athena, right. At Athena's apartment one night, they've been drinking and whatever, and Athena dies. And
this isn't the first chapter. This is
not
a spoiler.
This is how it opens.
Yeah.
And so, and I'll leave the description of that, to the book, but, In that moment, June, who is this, like, you know, her first novel failed. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't have like a big following or anything. She sees the opportunity and steals the book about the Chinese American workers from Athena, who, you know, it's, you gotta roll with it because it's like the only copy. It's a hard manuscript. It's not like
she wrote it on a typewriter. She did not, it does, it's not in Google Docs or Word. It's,
right.
It's a physically printed
iteration.
Yeah.
And she takes it and, you know, you watch her rationalizations go further and further as she steals her friend's work as her own.
Her
dead friend's book and tries to present it as her own work. And
it's in June is a white woman who's publishing this, you know, heavily researched book about Chinese exploitation. And even it's also, it talks the publishing industry, the role that they're playing, that they played in it as well. And the book is called Yellow Face for obvious reasons. And it was just so smart, I would say. Like the writing was so quippy and funny. And it was a quick read for me. And my only apprehension with recommending this book, and I'm curious what you think, Lisa, do you think it's too inside baseball with publishing?
I didn't actually think that. I mean, there's a lot of inside baseball, but she makes the inside baseball kind of, you get kind of hooked in it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because really the guts of it is the sort of moral decline and whatever of June. And it's more of a commentary too, I think, in terms of the publishing. Like, you could take any industry that took someone like Athena and blew her up into this big status and she's worshipped. And then it's a lot about social media, right?
Yeah.
And how people tear people down. Everybody loves to, you know, it's like the great success story. Now let's tear her down. Now let's put her back up. And it's unexpected. There were things that I would happen early in the book and I'd be like, oh, I see where this is going. And then boom, it didn't go there. It was something totally different. So I thought you know what I mean? Like, it was not at all.
It keeps you guessing. And it makes me.
It does. Yeah.
It makes me want to read some of her other work. So she.
Oh, me too.
The author. I'm just going to read her bio because I'm just like, I read her bio and I was like, how did she write a book while doing all of this? So, okay. She's a Marshall Scholar, translator, and the Hugo, Nebula, Locus, and World Fantasy Award nominated author of a trilogy, the Poppy War trilogy. She had a best-selling author, Babel, that came out last year. She has a, what is MPhil? Is that Masters of Philosophy? What is that?
I think it's a Masters of Philosophy.
Okay, she has an MPhil in Chinese Studies from Cambridge and Contemporary Chinese Studies from Oxford, now pursuing a PhD in East Asian Languages and Literatures at Yale. And she, this is her sixth book. How is she doing all of this?
She's a machine. She's like a Stephen King, I guess.
And it's so good. Like, she's so good. And then real quick, can I tell you about an audiobook that I'm obsessed with?
Yeah, because we'll do Music Minute in audiobooks. So, like, what are your best audiobooks?
Okay, so as you know, in addition to, you know, publishing a book and breaking a toe and raising a puppy and all of this other stuff, I'm also very into psychoanalysis and philosophy and all of this other shit. So right now, I'm listening to this book called How to Be Perfect by Michael Schur. And he is a comedy writer. You've watched all of his stuff. He wrote for The Office. He co-created Parks and Rec. But The Good Place is this book kind of lives in the same universe as The Good Place. Did you watch that show?
I watched some of it. I liked it. Yeah.
So it's really about, you know, The Good Place is about philosophy, and I love learning about philosophy and psychology and just how people think. But what I love even more is learning about it from a comedy writer, because he presents this book about morals, ethics, and behaviors in such a funny way And yeah. The audiobook is, he narrates most of it, but then like the cast of The Good Place, Ted Danson and Jamila Jamil and Kristen Bell, they're all, the cast of The Good Place is also reading this audiobook. And so it's just,
That's so great.
It makes learning about philosophy way more approachable and fun. Mm-hmm. And so each chapter is structured like, you know, these different ethical problems of like, or ethical conundrums of like, you know, is it okay to steal a loaf of bread to feed your family if you're hungry? And then he talks about all of these different philosophical points and how they would tackle that ethical dilemma. And wow. he wrote it with a philosophy professor. So it's not just his perspective. Like he has an actual philosopher fact checking, and we hear some of his notes too. So
yeah.
if that is interesting to you at all, I highly recommend it. It's just such a, I never thought I would say that I'm having a fun time reading about philosophy, but it's fun.
I love it. That's so great.
Speaking of perfect, so that one's called How to Be Perfect. This other book that I read, I did audio and the physical copy, and I did them at the same time.
So you really read like 84 books.
I guess. So this book is called The Perfectionist's Guide to Losing Control. And it's written by a therapist named, what's her name? Catherine Schaffler. And it is a book about perfectionism, but it's not so much how to, it's not like a self-help book of like how to be a better person or anything like that. It's just more like the traits that we perfectionists have and how to hone them and put them into practical use instead of trying to not be a perfectionist. She's really meeting the reader where they are and saying, look, you're a perfectionist. Let's deal with it. And I really liked that approach.
I love that approach because it's similar to like, you know, we've talked about this a bunch, how our perfectionism or whatever you want to call it, our drive like that, it can be bad because it makes us crazy, but also it's a big piece of what propels us to, you know, do things to be successful, to work, you know what I mean? Without my perfectionism, if I was not, you know, so it's a double-edged sword because one of the things that helps people, you know, who are overachievers is that they feel compelled to be perfect and overachievers. And mm-hmm. so there's sort of two sides to that point. So I love that that's like a guide to how to channel it in a healthy way.
In a healthy way, exactly. And of course, I think I was like trying to get my gold star in perfectionism by listening to the audio and reading the physical copy and highlighting. It's like extreme nerd over here, but
gold star for you.
It was super helpful for me to. I don't like reading self-help books that make me feel like I need to change who I am. I like reading self-help books that remind me that I'm great the way that I am, and here's how to you know, maybe some other uses for those traits of yours.
Yes, that is awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like we could go on forever, but
yeah, those two really stuck out to me.
Yeah.
What about, do you want any podcasts that you wanted to?
I listen to, because I study Soul Tarot with Lindsay Mack. I listen to Tarot for the Wild Soul podcast, which comes out every week. And, I love that. And I've also been listening to, I just finished a new course on the court cards, which was really good.
Yes.
And I have to admit, I don't recommend my other podcasting habits to anyone because it's all political and nobody wants to. We've all got plenty of that.
It's very tough to figure out how much political news I want to consume. Because I do want to just dive in and consume it all. And then I'm like, okay, I need, like I said at the beginning, I need to escape. So I'd rather just read a novel. And that's just, that's how I get through right now.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's great. And it's so we'll tough. Put these links in the show notes. And yeah, we could actually talk for ages about about books, but we will end it there for now. If yes. you're ever looking for book recommendations, let us know because we'll have some. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, Sobriety Party, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.